And now, the Dave Kimchin Show.
Feeling all right? Yep. Hanging in there?
Just waiting to kill some Russians.
Yeah.
So we hate them. They occupied my territory. I was born in Crimea, and they started occupation in 2014. And now they start to occupy my whole territory of Ukraine. So we have to stand against them and kill them all.
Have you had any successful target neutralizations yet? Like, have you killed anybody yet at this point?
We have.
Hi there, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. You just heard from three members of the Ukrainian military stationed just outside of Kyiv, working to defend the capital city there, talking in very real terms about this war that continues on now, more than 2 weeks after it began with Russia. And, you know, what we're trying to do here on this program is get a real on-the-ground understanding of everything happening there. So when you consider something like this and talking to folks who are literally in the fight, yes, the conversation is going to be a bit dramatic, a bit intense. So keep that in mind as we continue on throughout all of this. But we've been talking with several people over there. We talked with a member of the Ukrainian parliament. That interview was online. Also talked with people who have fled Kyiv and a woman who's working to help get people across to the Polish border. So we're learning so much learning together as we dive into this and stay up to date with the headlines, this very tragic situation. I mean, the humanitarian impact alone, obviously completely devastating. So we are seeking to learn, to find out more, understand what's happening. And we talked with Jose again. Jose is one of the voices you heard there. Jose is someone we talked with a few days after the conflict first began, first time in the military. He signed up to defend his country. He's about 57 years old, and first time ever doing anything with a uniform on in terms of a military and such. So he talks, gives us an update on what he's seen and what's happening, and we will get right to that. It's morning there, so he was spending his morning telling us about the last 24 hours and so on and so forth. So let's get right to that. I appreciate you taking the time checking in live with us. Are you still out just outside of Kyiv?
Yes, it's the same district, but we keep changing locations. So our friends, so to call these animals, cannot trace us. So we move around. We are a special unit, so we have to move around. Yeah, but same district, yeah.
Okay. Give me an idea of, since we last talked, I mean, some of the things you've seen, certainly like in the last day, I mean, what's it been? Has there been an increase? I'm reading that Ukrainian forces are digging their heels in outside Kyiv. That's certainly where you are. I mean, what's it like on the ground right now?
Well, keep in mind, I have very fragmented picture. I'm not in command. I don't have a sort of a wide intelligence. All I can see is what I can see and what people I'm serving with can see. What I have seen is that we had one, how do you call it, incursion? Like we had one sort of intervention, like a 24 hours raid through the Russian positions. And we have seen this beyond, close and beyond the front line. And it looks ugly. It looks like Russian forces divided into three completely distinct category. Pretty much not coordinating, hating each other, and clearly each one with a certain mission. We have seen, I will tell you what it is, but we have seen devastated residential areas. I think I sent a video, a photo.
Yeah, I saw that. It was incredible. My gosh. There's nothing left.
It's a direct heat in the bedroom of an apartment. And I can send you tons of that because even friends in different... This is what I've seen, what I've... I walked with my military boots through it. Mm. But the friends that because it used to be this Bucha, Irpin, Gostomel area, it used to be all the prosperous, very prosperous districts for middle-class IT professionals kind of area, which is ecologically pleasant, nice, youngish, you know, sort of a bit more modern sort of part of towns. And it's being destroyed. I've seen it with my eyes. The other thing that was impressive is the level of resistance. Again, there are three categories of people that took arms mm-hmm. On our side, outside of the military, outside of the Ukrainian military. And this was also impressive. And it's actually, you know, I've seen it again with my eyes, and I've talked to these people. I've sat in the you know, in the trenches next to them. And it's different when you do an assignment in you know, in a field from what you are doing inside the residential district where people fight every day, and you know, there was a bomb shelling flying in 120, 150 millimeters caliber. Again, was landing two on the roof, and I would say eight in between the houses, like playgrounds, next to kindergartens, like anywhere on the road, on the pedestrian walk. And when you sit with these people, you know, next to each other, sort of it gives you a pretty deep understanding of what they're doing and why they're there.
Yeah.
So other than that, one general observation, because it was a March 8th, which is a communist, traditional communist day of celebrating women, which nobody takes seriously anymore. And some people take with disgust because this is a hangover of the Soviet time, but still mm-hmm. people respect, you know, every time you pay tribute to your woman, you expect to be treated nicely in return. And sort of men always try to do their best. So I took a day off, like a night off rather. Mm-hmm. And I went home and I met my family, but I had a drive through a city. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that in Kiev, people are starting to understand that this war is not for a week or for two. Mm-hmm. Some coffee shops are opening up, you know, some small car repair outfits are opening up, and especially helping military, you know, like fixing tires and stuff, so simple. Gas stations are working on and off. People on guard, being more sort of alert and reasonable. Like, you know, they learn how to distinguish passers-by from potential, you know, the potential Russian troops interfering. Kiev is turning back to not normal life. You cannot have normal life. Mm-hmm. Like my children, for example, they go to school they are not in Kiev. I evacuated, especially small children should not mm-hmm. be. But schools are turning to online, and yesterday was the first day when, you know, there was a school, online schooling for children in and out. You know, some stores are working, you don't get the full variety of vegetables, mm-hmm. but you get all the basics.
Right.
People learn how to deal with this, it's hard for me. I'm sort of juggling with these adjectives, and I'm trying to be correct, but it's
no,
hard to
I,
be correct.
No, I get it.
So with
I
mean, it's, animals on our land, yeah.
It's striking
anyway,
to me.
Anyway, coming back, sure. what, yeah. No. Finish your sentence.
Oh, no, I was just going to say.
It's striking.
No. The picture, I mean, the picture you're painting is incredible. I mean, of you know, people kind of, I mean, on and off coming, trying, you know, coming back online, businesses, cafes, gas stations and such. And I'm wondering, I mean, is that, do you attribute that to the success of the reported success of you all holding off Russian forces from the capital city? I mean, is that it, do you think? Or is it just, I mean, I guess in a sense, life does kind of go on, but it seems, I'm trying to paint the picture and it seems a little jarring. Do you know what I mean? But I mean, there's one.
I will give you an answer to that. I will give you an answer. Tell me, have you been using limo drivers or taxi drivers consistently? Not like Uber, but more professional drivers?
Nope, just Uber, basically.
Okay. Well, long time ago, it was, you know, people were using more limo and sort of regular drivers. Mm. If you will recall your experiences sitting in a car with other people who drive fast and aggressive, I can tell you that the best driver is a slightly phlegmatic, relaxed type of a person. Because when he drives aggressively, it doesn't make a hysterical sort of atmosphere around him.
Right.
He does it in a calm and collected way. I would call my nation a bit phlegmatic driver. Mm-hmm. You know, we are friendly, we are slow, we are non-aggressive in many ways. Like you don't see in Ukraine fist fights on the street like you see in Russia.
Right.
And then I worked in Russia for years, and I've seen all of it. Like, you know, level of aggression, the sort of the appearing aggression is lower, but when people get into something, they adapt, and they have usually Ukrainian mentality is quite a stable mentality. Mm. You know, it's not, we're not prone to mass depressions, you know, or mass excitement of some, like it's a more stable nation.
Okay.
And this is the factor that brings us to normal life, because people had excitement for 1 week. Yeah, bombing. Yeah, war. Yeah, this. Yeah, that.
Yeah.
But you still have to continue. Whatever happens, you know, we lived with Russia abusing us for 400 years. Mm-hmm. 400 years we had them in and out. They were killing us in mass. They were killing us in hundreds of thousands and millions, and we survived, and we will survive. And that's the feeling, that's one thing. Another thing is interesting, very interesting about Ukrainians, because Ukrainians do not have central government. Mm. Like, you know, that they do have central government, but they don't have the central government that efficient and is leading and is sort of deciding for us what to do every day. People learn how to deal with situation on their level and how to survive despite anything that happens. And that's a beautiful ability that our nation developed through centuries. So everyone on their spot, they decide, you know, can I fix my water supply pipe? Can I, you know, can I help my neighbors? And I see more and more. I will tell you now about the three categories of fighters, and you will see that. You know, like I have seen yesterday, we were helping people to clean up some massive food storage. It was a big restaurant, and they asked for us to help to clean up, so they move this to safer place. And you know, these people, again, I don't know if you had Ukrainians in United States as friends, as family friends, but Ukrainians are best engineers, they're good doctors, you know, they're good professional people, because they have sense of duty, they're calm, they're responsible, they're hardworking. Maybe not as many politicians, maybe not as many, you know, very successful billionaires, you know, maybe not aggressive lawyers, like litigation lawyers, you know, cutthroat type of, you know, professional lawyers, but more people who, you know, who organize logistics, people who, I guess, stable, reliable, hardworking, positive people. Maybe I'm making it too nice of a picture, but
I think I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, so that is, I think that's the factor that contributes to people coming back to, not coming back to normal life. You cannot come back to normal life with these idiots. But, you know, to the extent it's possible, turning the circumstances to a functional and tolerable order. That's I would. Now let me give you the story about three types of Russian fighters and three types of Ukrainian fighters. Russian forces are now divided into three groups. One group is major, sort of the key, the bulk Russian military. These are normal people who happened to be in the army because they were, inscribed, like in the English word, inscription, yeah, inscribed. Like they have been called, you know, that they have this military, mandatory military service duty.
Oh, enlist, I got what you're saying, yeah. Like a draft or...
Draft, not, yeah, that, like, you that, know, they, everyone yeah. who's 18 years old, he has sure, to go and serve for 2 years.
Right,
okay. So they were giving, as usual, this Putin's lies that no people like that are there. And then this, really, they're there because they have been captured. The complete bullshit, because they don't have the professional army in large volume enough. So they stuff this as a gun meat, you know, as a sort of disposable material. And these people... You know, like, they're not criminals by mentality. They just happen to be there. So they have orders. You know, they came to this land. They were not given explanation of what they're doing. Where are they going? They've been told you have to kill. They've been told if you don't kill, we'll kill you. They're scared. They're demotivated. They're poorly fed. Really, their supply is behind. And it's obvious. It's cold outside. Today, it's minus 10. But it's no rain. The 3 days before it was raining. Everyone in every city, people look at them as, you know, as cockroaches, as mice, as rats. Like, you know, people don't welcome them, and it's, you can feel it everywhere you go. You know, if you're not being shot at, if you're not being thrown grenaded, at least, you know, people are spitting in your direction, right. And it's not a pleasant. So these people feel what happens. Some of them defected, some of them surrounded, some of them came to Ukrainian side and said no more, but not that many, not in mass. Most of them are loyal to their oath and they understand that there is a criminal liability and they're afraid of it. But when the civilian corridors are being organized, these people behave in the civilized, like, you know, half civilized way, not all of them, but some of them. You know, when volunteers come and they say, well, we have elderly, we have children, we want to take them out of shelling, bomb shelling, they are saying, okay, this is my unit from this corner to that corner, I guarantee there will be no bullet. And then people are saying, beyond that corner, he said, no, it's the other category, which I don't control, within the same army. Okay, so that's a majority of them. Now, there is a minority. There are two minorities there. One is a type of private army, like Wagner type of shit. And these are military criminals. These are people who are guilty of multiple war crimes without any doubt. And these war crimes were, it's Chechnya. War in Chechnya generated tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, people, not hundreds, but tens of thousands for sure, of people who committed war crimes there, mass killing civilians and doing all sorts of abuse. I don't want to go through it, some horrible stories. Then it was repeated every place, Donbass, Syria, it's everywhere. These people, Libya, these people are professional war criminals. And there are thousands of them, not tens of thousands, not hundreds of thousands, but maybe I'm underestimating, but there are a certain number of these people and they serve a special purpose. They make sure that they execute anybody and all and anybody that doubt on the first category sort of side. So any soldiers that would have a sort of a guilt trip or doubts, or these people are there to kill them. And this was the practice that they used in the Soviet time, in the Stalin time. When the frontline soldiers had to go forward, and if they have doubts, there was a second line behind them that was just shooting the own soldiers. And that is, this is a category of people that has to be eliminated no matter what, by, I don't know, by international forces, by courts, by execution. I mean, these animals should not leave. Obviously, after the investigation, if it's after the war, but these people are these are not humans. We don't consider them humans. And the third category is a special Putin's sort of pet army, which is called Chechens. They are not just Chechens; they are Chechen betrayers who betrayed their nation. And if you remember going back, hundreds of thousands of civilian Chechens were killed. And out of that war came a special group led by Mr. Kadyrov, who is a famous television star with all sorts of weird behaviors. And these people are serving him, and they are loyal Putin and his sort of, I don't know how to... it's difficult to find the right word. Right. So these people behave in a rather non-cohesive military way. They're not as skilled as these private mercenaries. They are aggressive in their special sort of cultural way. But what is interesting is that when that officer, and I'm talking about specific situation where officer of Russian army says, I control that block. And beyond that, there is this so-called Chechens. I don't know how to call them because I don't want to offend Chechen nation by calling these bandits Chechens, you know?
Yes.
This Kadyrov, yeah, this Kadyrov's troops. So these Kadyrov's troops are beyond that. I have no control and I have no way and I have no desire to communicate with these animals. Exactly, word by word, what Russian officer, Russian military officer said about a unit which is standing next to him. So when the volunteers came to that Kadyrov group and they said, guys, first they started shooting, running around, you know, making all sorts of noises, how they usually do it. Then they kind of tried to come to settlement. So what Kadyrov's group asked, there was no request for anything. They just pay us money, ransom. Ransom, you know, cash. We didn't get cash. That's the whole conversation.
That's it. That's all. So, wow.
That's it. This is all about it. You know, they get money from Putin. They get money from anybody. They just, you know. So you have these three categories. Really, the last two are outnumbered by the majority of normal people who happen to be, you know, sort of, you know. Captives of the regime and the situation, but it's built in a such a way that it's holding its structure so far. It's not massive collapse. Now, in return, I can give you the three categories that fight on the Ukrainian side. Obviously, there is the military, and these are people who are professional military, or they have been recently called into the military to serve in the military. And when you are in the military, you come in, you take oath, then you are liable. You have to be there where your commander tells you to be. You get the weapon. You know, you're being fed and provided and dressed, and you're being told what to do. And you have no freedom, no room to say no, or maybe I would do it. So, you know, it's a normal military. And I'm not discussing this category. This category is as it is as any country. But then you have this territorial defense, so-called territorial defense. And it's split into three groups. And that's interesting groups for you to understand. The first, the major group, is the group that came, you know, just people from the street, like myself. You know, I came first to territorial defense. And my colleague that was speaking English to you, who came from Crimea, he also came to territorial defense because it was, you know, war kept happened today at 5 o'clock, and by 5 p.m. we all were in territorial defense. Like we came, we said, give us weapon, we will defend our motherland.
Right.
It's a bulk. These people are motivated. They're all volunteers. They all came because of, you know, because of their feeling, not because of their legal obligation.
Mm-hmm.
They received arms. They sit in different positions. Some of them engage in more active battles. Some of them are passively waiting for Russians to come. Some of them are helping, controlling intersections. But it's a bulk. These people came with zero skills. And they came with, and they are slowly learning. So you have already organized shooting ranges next to any deployment. They sort of learn how to shoot, how to, you know, disassemble their guns. They sort of, they get some tactical training, and that's mass, like a larger volume. Then you have a second category, which is quite funny. If you see them, it's quite picturesque sort of thing. You have guys that are not supposed to be territorial defense because mostly they are age-wise, not fit. Because you can be in territorial defense and military up to 58 of age. Beyond 58, or if you have certain medical conditions, you're not supposed to be. But that category has all the guys that are 60, 70, and they are skillful. They have been to Afghan war. They have been to military. You know, they know how to hold the gun. They know how to work with explosives. And these people are very, very active. And they are adamant. Like, they're really, really adamant. And they are stubborn. And especially when they defend their own district, own, you know, town. And that's what I've seen there. You know, they're sitting there in trenches. They're making those trenches. They're digging out some old machine guns, assemble them, putting together. So very inventive people. They put landmines, but it's against the Geneva Convention, and we're not using them. Mines, like a tank, anti-tank, heavy mines. So very, and they cook, and they eat, and they feed the military, and it's fun. It's when you see it. You know, they have gas. They were cooking in gas. And then the gas pipeline was blown. So 2 hours later, they had the sort of a big barbecue done underneath of a balcony, and sort of because you cannot expose the smoke and the fire. And they were making, you know, this Ukrainian famous soup called borscht. You know, and they it's just amazing, you know.
Yeah.
But these people are on the front line. They are right there, right on the front line. And then what they do, they change their clothing. They put their civilian clothing. They walk back home. On the way, they sort of count how many tanks and how many armored vehicles are deployed were. Then they sleep over, take a shower, come back, and they report to their commanders. And they make more abortion, more shooting at Russians. This is amazing. And then there is the third category, which is really impressive. It's a category of people who just said, fuck it. And these people have serious experience, military experience back in Donbass. These people come with their own equipment. They're fully armed. Again, through legal means, partly, and partly they're being seriously supplied by Ukrainian army.
Right.
Because Ukrainian army realized that these groups of enthusiasts, skilled enthusiasts, they can do much more damage than anybody else. So these groups are usually 10 to 20 people, and they act completely in isolation, except that they ask arms and they ask for certain artillery support in certain instances. I've been next to them. I had a sniper who was working at the kilometer 400 meters successfully, and military would know that this is not a, it's a serious exercise.
Right.
You know, these people are focused, these people are patriotic, and they're saying, we are not going away from that district. We will stay here. And this is real strength. Efficiency of those people and their abilities are beyond. Usually it's people between 30 and 45 maximum, 20, 27, 45 feet. These people knew that war is coming. These people were preparing for it, you know. And frankly, it was such a pleasure to see that specific category of people, because this is the strength. This is these are the people that will make the victory or whatever happens. It's them. It's their contribution. Sorry, long.
No, incredibly insightful. Long answers are incredibly detailed and vivid. So no, I appreciate all of that. I'm reading now in American media here at CNN, 40 mile long Russian convoy now largely dispersed. That's according to satellite images. New satellite images show parts of stalled convoy near Kyiv have relocated to areas with tree cover. So, that's obviously a major development. I don't know how much you can tell from that on the ground, because I know you said you only have a limited sort of view of everything, right? But when you hear something like that, does that, that's got to feel pretty good, I imagine. Relatively speaking.
There is a saying, don't underestimate your enemy.
Okay. Yes.
Russians have economy 20, by now is like 50 times Ukrainian economy, because our economy has stopped. Nothing works. Mm-hmm. You can imagine that on that magnitude of conflict, nothing works. People don't plant. People don't do agriculture, IT sector stop, transportation is dead, services dead, tourism dead. Everything is, the economy is completely frozen, but you still have to feed all this country, all these people. So Russia's economy, despite all the whatever sanctions, is still working because there's no war on their side.
Yeah.
You know, the factories are working, they're playing. So we are in a completely asymmetric situation. We're not fighting on their side, on their land, on their territory. They are fighting here and they're destroying everything. So number one. Number two, they have advantage in people. But the most importantly, they have advantage in equipment, because they have tons of equipment that they have been manufacturing. First, they had all the Soviet equipment.
Mm.
And then they have been manufacturing, so they have, hundreds and hundreds. We now are looking at the machine guns and sniper equipment that was repossessed, carefully, from Russians. They are well equipped. They have spent a lot of oil money that you and I paid for oil and gas. They invested into killing machinery. So we should not underestimate what Russians have. Putin has shown his ability to concentrate and to realize his mistakes. He clearly made a huge mistake. And everyone hoped that he will pay for this mistake with his life. But we should not underestimate inventiveness of that fellow and the level of corruption that he created with his consistent effort all around the West, all those little streams of cash that was going into European politics, American politics, everywhere. Don't forget about his big brother, east from Russia, who is sitting and waiting what this thing will bring to their sort of shore, and they will be supporting just one element. One of the most advanced companies in the world producing drones that is flying, all surveillance drones, opened up their codes to Russians. So Russians, and this is the most widely used by all sorts of categories of military and enthusiasts as a surveillance equipment to see where Russians are going. So they opened up the codes to Russians. So Russians now see every drone that takes off, what it does, where it lands. And there have been already cases where Russian military was shelling the point of departure of the drone. You know what it means. Like if military unit comes out, they launch that drone flies around, takes the pictures, comes back. That means that in that specific moment, in that specific point, there is a unit of Ukrainian military, and that's where shelling is being done. Thank you, Chinese. Thank you very much. Mm. That's a very great service. It shows the commercial aspect of your existence and the alliance that has been signed up just before Olympics. Very Olympic way of doing things. So what I'm saying is we should not underestimate. West should not expect that Ukraine will deal with that disease on our own.
Right.
We are not equipped for that. We are not, we can be fighting with Russians for 5 years until we all die, either of starvation or to defeat Russia on our own is not possible. However brave we are, how much suffering our children will take and our elderly people will take, we cannot do it. It's just physically impossible. Again, at some stage, we all hope that Russians will come out and they say, not anymore, 50,000 Russians, 100,000 Russians have died. Why are we doing it? Right. But the hopes for it are very limited because, Russia has been living in fear. Ukrainians are fearless because we had history of resistance at different stages. So there are some people who know their grandfather died. This Russians have lived in the fear and complete destruction, like mass killing of Stalin and all for centuries. Mm. And they're not capable of organizing any sort of resistance revolution, unfortunately. Mm. But I don't believe they are. And that makes this evil empire fairly stable. So it is not a television show where people for 2 months will be watching how Ukraine fights Russia, and then at the end, happy end, everyone is everything is restored. We gave them a few billion dollars. Ukrainians rebuild their bridges and plants. Everything is hunky dory. We're happy, happy West. No, that's not going to be easy. Again, talks about chemicals. We know that. We knew that. I absolutely believe they will use it. I have no doubt they will use it. They have used it in Donbass, phosphorus bombs. Yeah. It's a type of, they use it all the time. And we do have gas masks here and we prepare. But the military will survive. But the civilian population, and again, for military, this will be a major, minor thing, because we have such a dispersed and tactics is that we work in smaller groups. But for civilians, it will be devastating.
Right.
And I have no doubt they will use absolutely every mean. And again, longer you wait, more Putin and his group gets into this, all arms resistance. More chance they will use nuclear, because the idiocy, the schizophrenia, it comes in development. Mm-hmm. So the quicker we finish with that, the less chance of a major problem comes. The longer we wait, the more chance that this will turn into something ugly. Again, nobody is asking for American soldiers to fight, even though I have seen already some foreigners not in the military, but in the medical, like volunteers, people who came to help with medical assistance. Mm. I've seen them on the front line, but nobody is asking Americans to fight or French to fight, for us. No, we can do it. But what you have to do first, it's not a sanctions, it's embargo. There has to be complete embargo, 100% embargo. Look at what Germans are doing. No. They're still trying to do business with Russians. That's great. That's really a nation that suffered the Nazi and the consequences of Nazi. That's really impressive. So we should not underestimate the complexity, the level of casualties, the consequences. I mean, think about again that I kept coming back to this ecological point.
Yep.
And think about damage to the ecology that is now they brought some 50 як вона називається? Точка U, да? Point U missiles. These are very, very heavy explosive stuff that kills like in a radius of kilometers. Mm. But the more importantly, it has been already determined fact that a high explosion in one part of the Earth produces this tectonic consequences that then result in tsunamis and earthquakes. And I mean, how much of devastation are we going to bring to the entire world because of some one schizophrenic and a group of idiots around him? For what purpose? Hmm. Doing what? Creating a colony? Not anymore. We used to be slaves, white, yellow, black, but we're not. We live in the free world. And some people want to come back to Stone Age. Let's send them there. Let's build them a stone mausoleum and put them all there. Let them stay there. But we have to do it jointly. You know, mausoleum, we can't build ourselves. We can dig a grave for ourselves and for part of them, but we will not kill the beast. Hmm. Killing the beast is complete embargo and plenty of heavy arms for Ukrainian military and help and training. Well, closing skies, I'm being told close skies. I'm airspace professional.
I was going to ask you about that. I was going to ask you about that. Was actually my question on the not to cut you off. I was just thinking about the closing of the skies and your thoughts on where that is right now.
Well, depending on what you mean by closing of the skies, if you are saying closing of the skies is that the Western jets are fighting in the skies of Ukraine, I can see why Americans are saying no.
Right.
But if you say closed skies and Americans saying we will provide all means necessary to ensure that there are no military military equipment flying from Russia over Ukrainian territory, that's a different story. Mm. And for that, what you can do, you can first, you have lots of drones and missiles, and you can cover at least half of Ukraine out of sort of deployment in Poland, and you don't have to fly jets there. But then you have to say, yes, we will shoot because we want to protect civilian population, because millions of people left Ukraine, but millions of people went from Eastern Ukraine to Western Ukraine. So it's all heavily populated. All these Vinnytsia, Ivano-Frankivsk, Rivne, you know, all the west of Kiev, it's all populated by people who fled east. Mm. And they can say this is a no-fly zone, including Kiev. Anything beyond that, okay, Ukrainians will take care of it. Anything before that, and we're talking 600 kilometers out of Polish territory. Mm. If you deploy your anti-aircraft in the territory of Poland, you can cover, and no person will fly. Obviously, you can supply the same to Ukraine. Then you have the drones, and by the way, the Turkish drones are showing, you know, quite significant
efficiency. Poland is still waiting.
This game where Poles are trying to get a little benefit for themselves, upgrading their equipment, and Americans. I mean, this is like it's not even tango. It's sort of a really funny, salsa that they're performing there between U.S., Poland, and other countries. Come on, that's not time to get fancy.
We're
wasting our times and our lives and our equipment as well, because you know every day, you know the war is a very expensive exercise. Mm-hmm. You have cars being blown. Every day in our unit, cars are coming from the front line without the tires, without, you know, cars are being burned, you know, the armored vehicles being burned. People are being killed, you know, people are being injured. Like, it's all losses, and they have to replenish. We have to replenish it somehow. People is the most expensive. By the way, Ukrainian army is very, very careful with people, and I'm proud of it. Mm. The casualties are here, but they are not nearly as heavy as on the Russian side. Mm. I mean, we're talking, you know, if not hundreds, then for sure tens of times.
Right.
The difference. So, but we need equipment. We need this, and obviously the sky is the, you know, all the shit comes from the from above. Like you, right. you sit there and you're being shelled and you're being rockets are being launched. And but most devastating is the airplane attacks, yeah. and helicopters. So we are not asking for military servicemen of other countries to come and fight on the territory of Ukraine. No. But closing the skies is essential because either we close it with equipment that the West provides, West supports, and they say, okay, these areas are heavily populated by people who are fleeing the fighter. So we are closing on that, and you cannot fly anything over there. But there has to be some sort of, and again, you know, West has to start decisive moves. And if you cannot, I've been asked. Somebody asked me, would you want to join NATO? Are you keen? And the answer is, in the form that NATO is right now, me as Ukrainian, I have my doubts whether I want to join this toothless organization that cannot, yes, it's not your, we are not part of NATO, but we are fighting your war. We are fighting your war. It's we are fighting. I mean, look at this pretense. Why they would start war with Ukraine to not to join NATO? I mean, it's such an obvious thing that we are fighting the war of NATO, having a right to protect, better part of the world, and so they have to sort their act together. If they don't, this will be. Again, this will not disappear. Right. This will not disappear. Even if Putin says, now they're talking about freezing the conflict or whatever the hybrid, schmybrid they do. If you give him a break, if you give him a year or two, he will come back stronger. Mm-hmm. He'll be fed by China. He will use oil money to rebuild his military, and he will come back even stronger. We cannot afford it. You cannot afford it. Nobody can afford it. Europe should not afford it. We should not allow this to happen. Once and for all, it has to be done. Also, if this is done decisively, no China, no North Korea, no Iran, nobody will think of anything funny. You have to behave by certain norms. There are borders, there are international borders, there is law, the Geneva Convention. Yeah. I mean, you want to fight inside your two tribes, please. But don't try to change the global security order.
Right.
I mean, look at the United Nations. It's a joke. Now, it's completely dysfunctional organization. How can a country being on the Security Council with veto right do what they do? You cannot. This is not a functional organization. That's it. There has to be some way of sorting this out and squeezing Russia out of, I don't know, United Nations temporarily suspending their membership of it's just unbelievable. How can, I mean, when you have hypocrisy, when you have lie of that magnitude, how can, and then again, look back 10 years. How much of political abuse, how much of corruption, political corruption, how much it influences on politics in UK, in Europe, in United States? No more. Just let's face it. There should be people that are responsible, people that can take decisions, people that can take charge. Sorry.
No, you're fine. No. I'm listening. No, you're good. You're okay. I'm hearing everything you're saying. I mean, you're right. I mean, this is the test before, you know, like you said, the global security order, there's a lot of folks who are saying, you know, if the West does not step up, if NATO doesn't, you know, the, like you said, toothlessness. I mean, this is a moment that's going to reverberate through the halls of history, as they say, and not in a good way, you know, by any means. I mean, the future of the free world really does depend on decisive action here. I mean, I don't know how I think that's pretty clear, you know, among Western nations, but what we're seeing or not seeing is it's telling, I think a lot of people would say. you know, certainly a lot of analysts I've talked to just on the stateside, you know.
Yeah. No, it's you're right. It's a time in history where you might regret, enormously if you don't act. Again, acting in a smart way, not in any.
Nobody
is asking for. Yeah, absolutely. It has to be well thought through, but decisive. You cannot play the games anymore. You know, everyone is trying to get little benefits for some little elections of something upcoming. You know. Mm-hmm. UK, US, Europeans, you know, all this, you know, there are things beyond that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and I think, we're going to see, you know, I think there's G7 you're watching, there's NATO, there's all these, there's so many different organizations. And it's I think when I saw what happened in Mariupol, it was just like, if this doesn't take it to another level, I think if there's even a BBC reporter who said that, you know, I think a lot of people are feeling that way after seeing, you know, those ghastly images of the maternity ward that was, in the crater. I mean, that was just completely, wiped out. I mean, it's no other way to say it.
You know that there are people in Mariupol who are starving to death now.
Yep, the six-year-old girl, that little girl.
Yeah, but they cut off supply, and they have done it before. Mm-hmm. In 1930s, this Holodomor, this famine that they created, they will be doing it now. They will be cutting off supply and killing people en masse and then letting them come out and surrender. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to cut supplies of fuel, cut supplies of everything, of water, you cannot tolerate. Obviously, we will die. We will, yeah. But for what purpose? Mm-hmm. For them to then still have control of that devastated land and like 5-year fighting? Is that what the West wants to have, and that's what would benefit the West? I don't think so. Yeah. I don't think there is any benefit to even to cynical Western politicians in having devastated. Destroyed completely Ukraine. I think the only benefit that West can get is that NATO will sort their act together, that they will support Ukraine, will come out strong militarily, eventually join EU and NATO, and that will bring a lot of balance into the world, at least temporarily, because we all have to develop economically to counterbalance what China is about to offer us as a global power.
Yeah, that's
and again, it's not about fighting with China, it's about coexisting, but in such a way that we have our grenade in our hands while they have two grenades in their hand. But you have to have something, and you have to be willing
through strength, as one would say, as if some have said, it's been sort of a buzz phrase here in the States, peace through strength, I think they said in the 80s, or something like that, right? Or through, was it superior firepower? Maybe I'm getting that wrong. Anyway, that's what comes to mind. But no, I think
you're going the right day, right direction. And now it's a big challenge. It's a new challenge. Mm-hmm. But you see, a new challenge is using old tricks, which, you know, it's actually, you know, quite simple. There was East-West, Russia or Soviet Union West. So now they're trying to prove that the strength of the West is nil and negligible by sending this little half-degenerate brother to sort of fight a poor Ukraine and show how strong they are. Mm. And they're shitting their pants. They prove that they're not strong at all. They're not organized. They're not equipped. They're not capable. They're nothing. But now we have to prove the point, you know, because, however shitty, however poor, however idiotic they are, by throwing enough bombs, sooner or later, they will break through. Mm-hmm. And I think Ukraine have proven 10 times over that, you know, we're capable, but now we have to finish it up. Like it has to resolute into something.
Right.
And then Russia would do reparations. They would have to pay for every bloody breach that have been blown on, not Americans, not Europeans. Why should the budgets of civilized countries pay for behavior of these animals? Let them starve.
And money frozen on their bank
accounts. Money frozen on their bank accounts, but most importantly, their gas and their whatever minerals should be pumped to the benefit of the world, not to the benefit of group of schizophrenics. And that will be quite interesting, because that's where interests of China will intercept with the interest of the world, where China will put a claim to the resources east of Urals. But those resources will be taken by reparations and will be working to rebuild everything Russia has destroyed, not only in Ukraine, in Georgia, in Libya, in Syria, in Moldova, Pridnestrovia, which was another country which is destroyed, by the way, which is using, they're also being used to bomb Ukraine. So it's all interconnected, and now it's time to you know to do things. But
yeah,
do your best.
Yep.
We will do our best, and then we'll see what you know life will produce to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, gentlemen, I appreciate you, Jose, and for taking the time, and gentlemen, for you chiming in as well. We wish you the best of safety and good wishes, and we're thinking about you all over there. I mean, this is.
And we wish you good night, because we have good morning
yes.
already.
And good morning to you. Good morning to you. Thank you so much.
See you.